Okay. I have a cake made in a fleishig oven. Can I eat it on the same plate with non-dairy ice cream made on dairy equipment? Now, normally, let's take the question for what it is. If you make a challah in a fleishig oven, but there's no fleishigs in that oven at the time that you're making the challah, it's clear in the Ramon Siman Kuf Ches and Yerodeya that challah is considered a parah challah. So not only could you eat it with something made of dairy equipment, you can actually put cream cheese on it and eat it. So since it's made if it was made at the same time as fleishigs in the fleishig oven, then there are shyness. Then there's all types of details. If you can or you can't. But assuming that it was made not at the same moment as the fleishigs, even if fleishigs were made on that day in Ben Yomo, the challah is 100% par and can be eaten with actual melachiks. Can I use a cold fleishig spoon for non-dairy ice cream made on dairy equipment? The answer is yes, you can. You can use a cold dairy spoon for a lot of things. You can use a cold treifa spoon for a lot of things. But we certainly, lechatchila, try to avoid that. It's just a bad habit to get into. You know, you need to have the discipline. This is the fleishigs, this is the milachiks, never the twain shall meet. Once you start crossing the line, you lose sight yourself of when you should cross that line. It's a little reminiscent of the halacha when Avram brings a minhag that we don't take something which we had used b'kfias regularly for milachiks and kashra to start using it for fleishigs. Why? Because when you come to the kitchen, the mindset is this is for the milachiks. So now that the fact that it became fleishig, no one's going to remember. So it's the same thing here. It's not a wise idea. I was just asked, what happens if you made the challah while the steam was still in the oven from the fleishigs? You'd have a problem. So normally, but very rare that you do have steam. And most of the time when you open it, even if you're not thinking about it, the steam goes out right away before you put the challah in. And really, if you're going to make such a challah or a cake, you should make sure that the steam has gone out of the oven. It's going to be a slow process a little bit. I have the questions on the phone, and the phone keeps going back to, like, the home page. Can that same spoon go in the fleishig dishwasher? Okay. Yes, it could go in the fleishig dishwasher, because the spoon is used for cold, and there's no real milachiks here. But this is starting to touch the reason that we don't do such things. You know, you start creeping until we wind up where we don't want to be, you know. What's for fleishigs is for fleishigs, what's for milachiks is for milachiks, and let's keep them separate like our grandmothers would have done, or we were far better off than we are. Ramaytzi on Shabbos, in one place the two challahs on top of each other, or can they be side by side? And the answer is that obviously when we leave them on the table, most people lay them side by side. But when you make the bracha, you're supposed to put one on top of the other. On Friday nights, we put the challah that we're going to use on the bottom, and it should be a little closer to us. All the rest of the time, Yontif, on Shabbos day, we put the challah that we're going to use on the top, and it should be, again, that should be the one that's closer to us. That halacha says that normally, it's very interesting. The Gemara, in fact, even has a problem with this. How we're trying to have a shulling, and at the same time, we want to have the least amount of time between the bracha of the mitzvah and the time we eat. So the Gemara suggests, and that's what the halacha records, that on a weekday, we cut into the challah. If it's a whole challah, a whole bread, cut into it significantly. But it should be enough that it's still up within a shulin, which means if you pick it up on the smaller part, and the smaller part is still attached enough to support the larger part without it breaking off. So that when you finish the bracha of the mitzvah, you only have a little cut to make, and you'll be less of a hefsek in between the bracha and the eating. On Shabbos, we're afraid that a person should do this, because if he makes a mistake on Shabbos and cuts too far, So it's trash lechatchila of lecha mishnah. So the halacha says a person should make a roisha. A roisha means that you pick out the spot that you would like to cut, and you make a little mark there in the challah with the knife. One that's easy to find, not that they have to spend 5 minutes looking for afterwards because it's so small. That would be rather self-defeating. But you make a significant enough mark that after the hamaitzi, you know where you want to start cutting. So at least that part of the process has been taken care of. This is what it means when the halacha talks about making the roishim on Shabbos. It's again to close the gap in between the end of the bracha and the time that we actually consume the challah. We have a question about Bishul Akum. This is a very important question, a very relevant one. Bishul Akum does not apply to water. Bishul Akum does not apply to tea. It does not apply to coffee. But it does apply to things that are cooked in water. If you cook potatoes in water, you're going to have Bishul Akum. If the instant oatmeal has Bishul Akum, I'm not 100% sure. I don't really know. If it's edible, if you put it in cold water, would it be edible at that point, the instant? If it's edible, then there's no Bishul Akum. If it's not edible, then there's a question of Bishul Akum. And a question was also raised in terms of a microwave. Is a microwave an issue of Bishul Akum? And basically, most poskim hold that it is an issue of Bishul Akum. It's clear from Rav Moshe Zatzal that it's a full-fledged Bishul. I also heard someone tell me that they spoke to Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal about it. He said the same thing. I will note the fact, and as I say, I respect him deeply. I don't agree with him always. This is one of the times that I don't, with Rav Heinemann Shlita. Rav Heinemann holds that microwaving is not considered Bishul Akum. He considers it an offbeat type of Bishul, like you have in the Halacha Me'ushin, smoking something may not, in fact, include Bishul, be involved in Bishul Akum. So he apparently equates it with that. But as I said, the great Paiskim, Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman, both of them seem to consider it regular Bishul. And I know Rav Shlomo Zalman specifically addressed Bishul Akum with this. So personally, that's the view that I follow in a machmer in that regard. Carrying on Shabbos, can a woman carry a key on a bracelet? You know, let's talk about Hitzah. Hitzah has different dimensions. It's a very complex malacha. There is Hitzah, which is Kiderach HaMalacha in the normal fashion, and Hitzah in a non-normal fashion. Hitzah in a normal fashion is an Issa D'Raisa, assuming there's no Eruv. Hitzah in an unusual fashion is an Issa D'Rabbanan. Attaching a key to one's bracelet, we would nominally say, is not a conventional means of carrying the key. So I don't think it would constitute a deraisa. If people would always carry it that way, it would in fact be an isa deraisa to carry it that way. But I believe that it's unconventional, and therefore would be asur midrabbanan. But asur midrabbanan, it still would be. Now it's relevant, though, let's say a person is generally machmer not to use an eruv. There are those that don't use any Erev, nothing to do with the kashrus of the Erev or not. Erev involves a very controversial question in the halacha, and that is what are the requirements of a Rosh Hashanah. One cannot make an Erev in a Rosh Hashanah. And the reason that we do make Erev is we rely upon the view, which 50% of the Rishonim hold from, that you need 600,000 people, whatever that takes, but you need 600,000 people using this area, this street, whatever it may be. That's a whole pilpul in its own right for it to be considered Rosh Hashanah. So typically, we don't have 600,000 people in a local area. That's what we rely upon. However, half the Rishonim are machmir. So there are those that respect the kashas of the Erev greatly, and yet still don't carry in an Erev because they don't want to get involved in that machlokes Rishonim. As Rabbi Yosef Zatzal told me once, he says, the Erev in Yerushalayim is a very, very good Erev. The people that take care of it know their stuff very well, and they take very, very good care of it. It's a high-class Erev. But you shouldn't carry in any Erev for the reason that I told you. It has nothing to do with dissing the kashrus of the Erev. It's a chumrah somehow. But as Darach HaShulchan notes, Rather surprisingly, since it is a real split in the Rishonim of this, the Chofetz Chaim and this Shaila in Simon Reish Mem Hey, the very beginning of the second Chelik, the fourth Chelik of the Mishnah Berurah, he gathered 25 Shitas Rishonim on this subject. And they split 13 to 12, okay, which means this is a 50-50 split. You know, we could probably get another 20 Rishonim since that time that have come out. But it's a 50-50 split in the Rishonim. Or Hashulchan writes, it's as if a voice rang out from heaven, a baskel, that we should follow the Mekilim. That's the minute of Klal Yisrael have embraced the Mekilim in this Shaila. So, what happens if a person's machmer, not to use the erev, when he needs to carry something? So I heard from a Yidid, Rav Moshe Shaul Klein, Shlita, who's one of the very, very choshev, or one of them that I rock today. He's the foremost Talmud disciple, foremost Talmud of Rav Vozhna, Zerich HaTzadik B'Brocho. So he told me in Rav Vozhna's name is that if you have to carry on Shabbos, you should carry the Shiva. So it's not a derisa that you carry, even though you personally machmer normally. If you have to carry, you carry in an unusual fashion. Put something inside your hat. And the Meila, for those cases, he says he should be so, for that much at least, he should be so mechaliyeva. But you certainly cannot carry lechatchila or putting a key on your bracelet in a place where there is no air. Now, this is a very contemporary question, and I hope soon that we're going to put an end to it. But right now, we still have the outdoor midyonim, and because of our response to the epidemic, the pandemic, we're trying to move the midyonim as quickly as we can, and still daven reasonably. So we've been starting the outdoor midyonim, we're starting the midyonim at Sheikh Anad. So what happens if a person comes to the minyan and they're waiting for a minyan to come and they're waiting? Should he get? The truth is, it's really only the chazan that has to start from Sheikh Anat. You know, a person himself could go all the way through to the end of Ishtabach and wait at that point, which is a more natural break. I mean, I said Sheikh Anat because that's typically when we start with the chazan, so the minyanim should have a normal tzura that we start from Sheikh Anat. But if a person's waiting around, just finish Ishtabach and then wait for the rest of the minyan to show up. Can one park in a church parking lot if that is what is signed for a nearby workplace? But the question is, it's a Maris Ayin question. Right? The halacha states that we should not enter a house of a Avodah Zarah. And in a broad sense, because of that, we stay away from houses of worship of any other religions. We don't get involved in exactly the question. Is it an Avodah Zarah? It's not an Avodah Zarah. Stay away from other houses of worship of other religions. So the question is to park in the parking lot. Now, you have this in other places. There are places where are catering halls that the overflow parking, I don't even know which one now, but where the overflow parking was in fact in the parking lot of a church. So he has a person goes to work and his business rents, you know, spaces for their employees in the church parking lot. And I guess from Monday to through Friday, they don't have such a big demand for their parking lot. You know, they're happy if they have a big demand Sunday morning, but they're not going to have 300 people, 200 people coming to park there on a Monday morning. So it's a very good way of raising funds for the institution to rent them out to local businesses. So he wants to know if he's allowed to use the church parking lot. I think it's very clear in a place where this is going on, he's not the only one that has such a space. So people know that's in that area that people use this as used as a commercial parking lot during the weekdays. So I would not see a problem with it. I mean, if he'd be the only one, I'd have to think of some aids of him, maybe to hang some sign or something on his car that he's, you know. But
should a Jewish business not use that, rent from
him? I would certainly encourage a Jewish business not to rent from such a place, yes. Now, I just had a question that someone wants to know if they can attend an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in such a place, at a house of worship. Most of them do take place in houses of worship. I was walking in a Jewish neighborhood, not in ours, and I'll leave it unmentioned which it is, and there were basically signs directing people to a local house where they had an AA, the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, on a regular basis. But the person that has that childish and iskarov, many, many rabbonim under most circumstances would do a heter for such a person to participate in such a place, assuming there is no other place to participate in the AA. It is a problem that has to be addressed. It's a significant problem. And as I said, it's known under the circumstances that it's used for other functions. The Alcoholics Anonymous is using it. One second.
Who's there? I'm sorry, I was outside.
Does one say, we know that the minig, it's really started from the yeshivas and it's migrated to the rest of the Klal Yisrael. That, well, we say of all the tzion, it's also a kedusha. When we say the sukkah of kadosh and baruch, we say it together. So the person wants to know, should they say Hashem Yimloch aloud? Now the answer is Hashem Yimloch itself part of kedusha? And Rov Achronim hold it's not. The Chabatskis hold that it is. That's a psak of the Balatanya. But the rest of the world holds it's not considered part of kedusha. And for example, if one is during a Lakayna Tzar, if one is allowed to interrupt for Kedusha, one just says the Pasuk of Kodesh and Baruch Kavod. You know, we Paskin, they don't say Yimloch. According to Chabad, you say Yimloch too. Now, if you look at the text of the Volatian, it's rather obvious that they didn't intend us to say Yimloch out loud, because they made an introduction for Kodesh, they made an introduction for Baruch Kavod, and somehow the author forgot to make an introduction to the Pasuk of Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Vaed. The answer is he didn't forget, because he held the halacha like Rov Achronim that it's not considered part of Kedusha, and you're not supposed to do it out loud. And now we have some people who come along, they're so earnest about it, they have to say, they're Sabei Shkente, out loud, to let us know that after Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Vaed, which contravenes the halacha, is the part that is said in Targum is supposed to say in an undertone. So here we have a chumrah, according to one shita, which is not Meikra Din, and we wind up even trashing the halacha to observe a chumrah, which is not really brought down the halacha. And it's clear in the text of the Volatzin was not intended. One fold laundry and put it away on Friday night. And the answer is no. Folding laundry is a tircha, and it's not the Terech Shabbos. It should just be put away wherever you need to put it and fold it after Shabbos. It's not an activity for Shabbos, folding laundry. I mentioned that I'm not very keen about burning challah, and rather to wrap it and throw it out. So my wife flattens the challah, wraps it, and burns it all the way through in about a half an hour, and broils in the oven. What is wrong with this method? There's nothing wrong with the method, but it's a method which, if you make the slightest mistake with, if it's not fully burned, and you touch the challah to the oven, you thought it's fully burned, and you pick it up, and the foil is got a little torn, uncovered, or tore on the bottom, and it touched the grate before it was burned, so now you have to kasher your oven. The oven is now considered non-usable because it has absorbed something which has kedushas truma, which we're not allowed to eat with manazeh, so you now have to kasher your oven. So therefore, that's the reason I'm not in favor of it. You know, there's some yekis probably that can figure out how to do it exactly correct, but it's not the wisest idea, and I did mention that I found it a safer of, according to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita, that one should also put it in a bag, tie it up, and throw the challah out. Is there an inyan of giving tzedakah to anyone that asks? Right? We have various lavim in the Torah, or sikbites yodicha, that one should not refrain from giving tzedakah, etc. How do they apply in contemporary times? So I'll tell you a very interesting story. I asked the Shaila to Rabbi Yoshua Zatzal, and he looked at me, and he says, I don't get you. He says, tell me, he says, in America they don't have welfare? He says, even in this country we have welfare. So he says, if there's welfare, then the assumption is that people have their basic needs taken care of. So why are they collecting money in the street? He said, in generally speaking, he said, you're not going to be yotze mitzvah tzedakah by giving money to people in the street. Because you have, there's a very strong assumption that they don't need the money. This is that it's not legitimate. He says, if you want to be yotze mitzvah tzedakah, you should give money to a gabbai tzedakah who investigates the people that he gives the tzedakah to before he gives them the tzedakah. He used to himself give a small amount to people that came, you know, to ask him directly. I presume if he didn't give them, that would be like a death sentence for them. This guy asked Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabbi Yoshua didn't give him tzedakah. There's nobody in Klal Yisrael would help the guy again after that. So he used to give himself a small amount, but he told me there's no chiyuv whatsoever, and that's not the way to go about mitzvah tzedakah, by giving money to people in the street.
Yeah, but welfare may not be enough to cover.
It may be enough, you know. Be mavar before, it was exactly his point. Know what you're dealing with before you're giving money out.
Is it a matter of potential Kiddush Hashem to give a person the street? Just a quarter, nothing big. But
listen, you know, it could be a Kiddush Hashem. If it is, you think the choshesh that it is a Kiddush Hashem, then do it. You know, a lot of times, listen, I don't want to talk about it, but we have people that misrepresent themselves grossly. You know, the halacha says we should give non-Jews tzedakah as we give Jews tzedakah. I don't have a problem with that. It's a din in the Gemara and Gittin, it's a din in the Shulchan Aruch. But that, to me, doesn't tell me that I should give tzedakah to someone that misrepresents himself as a Yid. That's a different story. Totally different story. Well, let's see what we have here.
Are you allowed to daven for a certain person to be elected as president?
If you think that it's good for Klal Yisrael, then you should, and the country, you should daven for it. Why not? Like anything else we need.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. What else we have? It's a very interesting question. We'll go in this order. Should one drink a revius of wine during the Shabbos meals besides for Kiddush wine? And the answer to that question is probably yes. There are two separate halachas that have to deal with, which deal with wine on Shabbos. One is reciting Kiddush, but when you look in the Rambam, I think it's Perek Chavtes or Perek Lamed, that there's an inyan of koveya sudosa walayayim, that part of celebrating a Shabbos or a Yontif is to drink wine as part of the meal. Again, if a person doesn't have a tam in wine, so they're not suggesting that a person drink wine that they don't have tam. That was rather interesting. The Ravid, if you look at the Ravid, we do not eat before Kiddush Shabbos morning. That's the halacha. That's based on the Rambam. That the Rambam looks at Kiddush, looks at what we do Shabbos morning as a din of Kiddush. There's Kiddush Friday night, there's the big Kiddush, there's the little Kiddush. And that's somewhat supported by the Lashon of the Gemara. The Gemara calls it Kiddusha Rabbah, which is a roundabout way of saying the little Kiddush. but it does call it Kiddush. The Ravid says, you know why it's the little Kiddush? Because it's a very little Kiddush. It's not Kiddush. It's sort of parallel to the Kiddush on Friday night. You make it before the meal, but it's really not Kiddush at all. What is it? It's Kovei HaSudas Olayayim. It's to start drinking wine, make a bracha b'Priya Gofen, because we're going to use wine during the meal itself. And according to the Ravid, in fact, there's no Iser to eat or drink before Kiddush on Shabbos morning. You have to wait till after davening Shacharis, but you don't have to make Kiddush first according to him. We don't pass in that way. But his perspective is that the entire Kiddush Shabbos morning is an inyan to start off the Kovei HaSudas Olayayim. So there is an inyan, if one does like wine, to drink wine but a meal on Shabbos or Yom Tov.
How much wine? Does it make a difference?
A revius, I believe. I would believe a revius, like 3 ounces. We don't want you to slide under the table, Yossi.
Thank you.
It's a very interesting question. Is washing before eating foods which are made wet, but it's 7 mashkim. We'll come to that in a minute. We know that we do Netilas Yadayim before we eat bread. And the night of the Seder, we do Netilas Yadayim before we dip the karpas into the salt. Which is reflects a halacha that there are 7 liquids. They are wine, blood, which is not really relevant because we can't eat blood. Honey, which means in this regard, bees honey, olive oil, milk, dew, and water. Anything which is made wet, wet enough that if we touch it, our hand would be, you know, wet to the extent that we could actually, let's say, put it on our forehead and make our forehead wet. So one has to wash until you die. That's a din in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, this is a din which has been more observed in the breach than in the observance of Jewish history. But it's recorded even in the Achrayim. There's a Tosfos in Masechet Chulin that says that this Gemara about washing before one, let's say, oh, it's for non-bread. If I have a wet apple or I dip the cookie into a cup of coffee, is only relevant when Tumen Taira is being observed. But in the absence of Tumen Taira, Tosfos holds that Gemara is not relevant. Other Rishonim disagree with Tosfos. The Shulchan Aruch Paskin, in fact, not like Tosfos. But the Minig, to the largest extent, the Kukul, over the generations, has been to follow the practice of the Baliya Tosfos, not like the Shulchan Aruch. The Vilna Gaon was very, very strong on the fact that one should wash if one has a wet fruit, or dips a cookie into a coffee or milk. And he, to such an extent, the Vilna Gaon said that one should recite the Bracha of Alma Tilas Yadayim for it, in the same fashion that we recite the Alma Tilas Yadayim for washing for bread. So that, the Gaon's view has not become generally accepted. But what has occurred over the last 100 years is that more and more people have become particular about washing for something that they dip into one of these liquids to be more machber like the Shulchan Aruch. So if you ask me what it is, I would call it, wants to know, like the questioner, if it's a din or a chumrah. So that's a very hard thing to say. The minig in Klal Yisrael is to treat it like a chumrah. And yet, by the fact that most Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch hold that way, I think we ought to really say that it's closer to a din than a chumrah. And we might say, listen, there is a heter for it, but we're dealing with something which is essentially a din. That's what I think would be appropriate, that a din which the Shulchan Aruch was machriya, that we should wash. The Vilna Gaon paskin, that we should make a bracha even on it. And most Achrayim hold that way. So why is it that we should not consider it a din? Now it's interesting. Some want to bring a raya. Well, it must be it's a din because on the night of Pesach we wash by the Seder. So if it's not a din, why are we washing? And the answer is the Chok Yaakov says, on the night of the Seder, we do everything at the highest possible standard. That's the whole Seder. Everything is at the highest possible standard. And Ramelan, this din also, where maybe we undertake to follow Shittas that we don't normally follow a whole year, so that the Seder, everything about the Seder should be at the highest standard. So we don't really have a raya per se from the Seder to our practices.
Hello. How do you wash? Is it like for bread, or it's just
like
once
for bread.
Each hand?
Yeah, like for bread, the same thing.
Twice in each hand, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Just you don't recite only two lessons and I am. Karpa star. Now, I'll address a couple of these pastas. We'll need to wash for the following wet foods. Chips and salsa, french fries and ketchup. Now, even as, let's assume for the moment that most of the liquid in the salsa or in the french fries would be water, which is a debatable proposition, what's most of the liquid. But even if it is, there's a psak of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach with something which is a tofu, which is a secondary food that one doesn't have to wash on for this type of netilas yadayim. And Mela, these things which are secondary, one does not have to wash for them. So therefore, the ketchup is certainly secondary to the french fries. The sauce is also secondary to the chips, without a doubt. And the Shlomo Zalman says that's why he holds in the Yerushalmi minhag that they give Yerushalmi kugel with a pickle. That even if one eats the pickle without a fork, very unyekish. But nevertheless, one doesn't have to make a broch on the pickle because it's a secondary. It's secondary to the Yerushalmi kugel. And I would think people don't generally eat the salsa if they don't have the chips. So I think the chips are the pshat that that's the equal. Without the chips, I don't see people taking spoons of salsa and eating. It's not the way the world works. So I would consider that a tough one. Someone is involved with the Amud Yomi. So they learn 5 days a week and then the Chazah 2 days a week over Shabbos. So he wants to know how many Siyumim he can get out of one Masechta from the learning of the first Chazar and the second Chazar. I mean, if they're all relatively simultaneous, you get one Siyum out of it. You know, if you finish a Masechta and then you go back and start from the front cover and you go again, you know, you make a new Siyum. But just because I'm learning every blot three or four or five times, and I get to the end, I can't make five CEOs. You don't make five CEOs out of that. You make one CEO. So I'll either have to go a little faster, I'll learn more. They want so many CEOs. This is a question that needs some explanation. Let me give the explanation. We have a blech on Friday night on the stove. Why do we have a blech? So now what the Olim's learning, the Daf Yomi people already passed by a while ago, Parakira. So if you learn Parakira, if you didn't know what a blech was, now you know what a blech is about. Chazal were concerned that if a person his food starts to cook as Shabbos begins, and it's not going to be ready necessarily by the time he finishes davening and he wants to eat, he may impulsively raise the heat of the fire to get the food cooking faster. So they wanted some measure of reminder that this is Friday night and don't mess with the fire. So that was introduced as what we call the Easter of Shehiyah. Now, there's a machlokas actually in the Mishnah between Hananiah and the Chachamim. What are the parameters of this Isa? According to the Chachamim of the Mishnah, and that's the way the Rambam and the Rif and the Sfaradish are world paskin, that as long as the food is not 100% cooked, or even if it is 100% cooked, but the flavor is improving, by staying on the fire, we are concerned that one will tamper with the fire. And therefore, according to the Sfaradim, even if the food is fully cooked before Shabbos, but you have a cholim there, for example, it's all cooked, but the flavor is going to get better. You need a blef for that reason. According to Ashkenazic practice, we follow Hananya, and Hananya says a blef is only needed until things at the beginning of Shabbos. And if the food is from zero to one half cooked, once it started to cook, and it's not a half cooked yet. But once it reached half cooked already, zero cooked, it's not going to be ready till tomorrow anyhow, so it's not going to help me to play with the fire. And half cooked, I can eat however it's going to come out. It's edible already, it's a cooked item. So there is, according to the Gemara, and the Gemara you learned, and Daf Yud Ches, the Gemara said there's such an idea of Kedei Rechaisa. That if you have a raw piece of meat that you put up right at the beginning of Shabbos, it doesn't need a blef. Because no matter what you do, it's not going to be ready on Friday night. So the question is, how much we really rely on Kedei Rechaisa b'zman hazeh? And the answer is very little. Because generally speaking, the type of heating devices that we use for cooking are that efficient that most things cook pretty rapidly. And therefore, we don't generally rely upon Kedei Rechaisa. Unless, I mean, you took some big roast beef that takes hours and hours to cook, or a turkey or something, you know, which there's no way that you can cook faster, fine. But most things tend with the type of heat that we have, how directly it's applied, and the way it works. We generally can take things from raw to being cooked in a pretty rapid amount of time. And consequently, we generally, we do not rely upon this heter to put up raw things without a blech. So we need a blech at the beginning of Shabbos for that reason. At what age should you start washing for bread? And these type of shilas, I always tell people, follow whatever they do in school. Schools have it well worked out, whatever school, if you pick a decent school for your child, they have methods of how to mechanach. Whatever they do in school, follow them. They'll say it's 4, it's 5, it's 6, whatever age the teachers feel that this is appropriate, just go with what the schools do. Don't try to make up your own Torahs here. It's hard to know exactly when's the right time. And as I said, schools are very professional at understanding what's age appropriate for each child. Is there a problem using magnetars on Shabbos? And generally, the answer to that, no, there's not a problem using magnetars on Shabbos. It's not considered a real minyan. Are you allowed to blow bubbles on Shabbos? You're allowed, I don't know when the Easter blowing bubbles on Shabbos. They burst very rapidly, so there's nothing that remains in them. So I don't know what the Easter would be in blowing bubbles on Shabbos. Okay, I think that we finished all the pre-submitted questions. I would like to open the floor to questions that people would like to ask presently.
You have some hands raised. Does Rav see the hands raised on?
I do. I just have it in the middle of the screen. How do you get it to the side?
Maybe participants on the bottom that says
That was
show participants. They click that.
Yeah,
don't go to the side.
I want to get it to the side of the screen.
So just click on the box and move it over. Drag your mouse. Click on the box, the participants, and move your mouse while it's clicked down. Move the mouse and it'll move over.
Now move right or left click.
Either way, left click.
It's not sliding. Let me see.
No.
This. Oh, 1 second. Not going 1 second. I need to try again. Usually I get the box on the right.
Do it on the top of the box. We're next to the word participants.
Over there.
Left click and move it over.
I got it. Okay.
Chesky, you're no longer needed. You can retire.
Chesky had some means he got the speed to work. Okay, still not as good as I would want it, but One more minute. Okay. Let me see. Nothing?
My doctor told me that I can't fast on Shivasubra Tamas, but I can fast on Tisha B'Av, but I have to take my pills. Question is on Shivasubra Tamas, what restrictions on eating do I have?
And on one should not eat excessively, that's all. You know, eat for things that you need to take care of your health.
And
please eat normally. That's
I all. I can't take pills without water. Could I use the chamomile tea concoction
One second. I thought your doctor said you can fast. You should not fast.
On Shivasubra Tamas, but Tisha B'Av, I can fast, but I have to take my pills.
Tisha B'Av is not Yom Kippur. It's a lot easier. My Shrei Zichron of the Baruch always used to tell me, yesterday was his yard site, my Shrei, the second yard site. So my Shrei always used to tell me in the name of the Marcheshes, that the Marcheshes wrote, he says, I'm a chayil and I have to take medicine on Tisha B'Av. And on Tisha B'Av, you can take it with up to a revius of liquid. So you don't need
a chamomile liquid.
Yeah, you don't need up to a revius, up to 3 ounces.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Should be gesund. Ronnie?
Thank you. Two questions that came out of what the Rav talked about. First of all, with the wet fruit, if you dry it before you eat it, you don't have to wash, I presume?
That's correct. Yes, you don't have.
And then the by a kiddush, when you drink a revius of wine, you then don't have to make a shahakol on, let's say, soda.
Correct.
But do you make a bracha achrona bar nefashos on that soda?
Whatever the general rule, if there is, if a bracha rishona took care of it, then the bracha achrona also takes care of it.
Oh, okay. I never would have thought that.
Moshe ben Chavir.
Anmut, I have Tisha B'Av on my mind. And with the existing conditions, it will be extremely hard to stay a couple of hours outside in the sun.
Yeah,
what is the bare minimum we should daven outside? I hate to say bare minimum, but that's the truth, you know.
We can do not inside. I have not yet, the truth of the matter is, now it's coming to 3 weeks, this coming week, I'll think about it. We certainly need to, you're right, to have an appropriate Seder Atfil of Tisha B'Av. I don't know what it is yet, but
okay.
As a Hashem.
I know, I'm a warrior by nature.
Don't listen, Ronnie will give you his umbrella.
Well, we could use Zoom for Kinnis, I presume.
Yeah, that's could talk. True. That is not Ronnie, you're on the money, Ronnie.
Oh, thank you.
You know, it doesn't need to have a minion in one place. It's not a dog.